It's crazy that it's already March. Well, where did the time go, right? If you don't know, me and my wife, we had our third child this January, and his name is Jacob, and he's actually here today for the first time at church. But if you're sick, don't go near him. All right, I'll be monitoring that. But I'm excited that our family is all here today. If you are joining us for the first time, or if it's been a while since you've joined us, we are right towards the end of our sermon series in the book of Leviticus. The reason why we chose the book of Leviticus is, I thought, hey, here's a book in the Old Testament that probably a lot of us don't really read. It might be a book that we might just kind of glance over and then skip. It might be a book that you might have tried reading and thought, like, this has no application to me whatsoever. So we thought, why not? It's a great opportunity for us to look at a passage and to look at a book that not many of us are familiar with. And we said, you know what, from the very beginning, we have two main goals for the book of Leviticus. The first goal is that as Christians, we want to be able to look at the book of Leviticus and see what are the regulations, what are the commands for us to live a life of holiness. And we said that holiness very early on is not defined merely by morality, though morality does deal with holiness, but that holiness is really the idea of us as followers of Jesus Christ to live a life that is distinguished, live a life that is distinct, and live a life that is set apart from the rest of the world. So that for those that do not know Jesus, for those that may not know exactly what the gospel is, that they can look at our lives and they can see that there is something different about us. That we live not according to the rules of this culture, but that we live counterculturally through the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the second goal, we said, is that we want people to all fall in love with the Word of God. That I know that, like I've mentioned, Leviticus might be a book that might be kind of boring. It might be a book that's very hard to understand. But that from the pages starting from Genesis all the way to Revelation, that what we have is the Word of God. And the Word of God is both breathed by Him and very profitable for teaching. And for us to look at a book, a very antiquated book like the book of Leviticus, it's still in it is the richness of God's grace and His love, so that we'd be able to fall in love with the God, with the Word of God and every part of it, not just the parts that we like to pick and choose from. So again, we want to go over just a quick context of what we're going through in the book of Leviticus. But if you don't know, and if you're unfamiliar with kind of Old Testament history, basically a real short summary, the people of Israel, they have been enslaved in the land of Egypt for over 400 years. In the book of Exodus, what we see is that God, through His miracles, He leads His people out of Egypt and into the promised land. And this journey from Egypt to the promised land is a journey that takes 40 years. So for the next 40 years, they're spending their time wandering in the wilderness, waiting for God to prepare the promised land for them. So the book of Leviticus is right at the beginning of this journey. And as people who have lived in a culture and lived in a country for over 400 years, now God takes this time in the wilderness to now teach and to instruct them on how to live as people of God. So again, just as we might be learning from the book of Leviticus and think, wow, these are a lot of different weird teachings, the very people of Israel at that moment, they were also going, wow, this is a very countercultural way to live, because they were so used to living under the culture of Egypt. Now, to break down kind of the book of Leviticus real quick, we spent the majority of our sermon series talking about the regulations of public worship. Right, so the very first half of the book was talking about how to offer certain sacrifices. We talked about the peace offering. We talked about the grain offering. We talked about all the sin offering, all these different types of regulations and rules that the people had to follow. So the first part of the book of Leviticus was really regulations about public worship. And last week, if you joined us, we said chapter 17 was kind of the transition period or the transition chapter, talking about public worship, now moving on towards personal holiness. And the second part of the book of Leviticus, that's what deals with a lot of our personal holiness issues. So this week and next week, we're going to be finishing off the book of Leviticus, and we're going to be really focusing on what are the rules, what are the laws that God has put in place for a desire for Him, because He wants us to live personal lives of holiness, lives that are set apart, lives that are distinguished from the rest of the world. So this week, we're going to look at the book of Leviticus chapter 19, and I'm going to ask three questions. The first question is this: what is our motivation for holiness? What is it that drives us to live a life that is set apart? What is it that really energizes us and motivates us to say, you know what, we're going to live different from the rest of this world and live according to what God has called us to? So we're going to look at our motivation. Second, we're going to ask the question, what does holiness look like? Right? And we can just use the word holiness or holy, and it's a word that we don't really use in our everyday language. So we're going to kind of look at very specifically, what is holiness that God is talking about? And then the last question is, what are the practical applications of holiness? If holiness looks a certain way, then how can we tangibly live that out in our everyday life? So we're going to look at what are the motivations of holiness, what does holiness look like, and what are the applications of holiness? So if you guys can turn with me to the book of Leviticus. The book of Leviticus chapter 19 is a pretty long chapter, and there's going to be a lot of things that we might not understand, but I want you guys just to leave it open. We're going to kind of go through it together. We're not going to read the passage at first, but we're going to kind of go through it as we come along, okay? So just leave it open to book of chapter 19. But our first question is this. What is our motivation for holiness? Now, growing up, my motivation, especially when I was young, to live a holy life or to live according to God's commandments was really based on fear. I didn't want him to be mad at me, and I didn't want to go to hell. The first time that I heard someone present the gospel message to me was when I was in first grade. Me and my brother, we had a sleepover at our friend's house, and you know, the lights turned, you know, after we played a bunch of Nintendo, you know, we were about to go to sleep, and then they asked us, "Do you want to go to hell or do you want to go to heaven?" Now in first grade, I was like, "I don't even know what that is." And they're like, "Hell is a place where devil comes and like they torture you forever." And I was like, "I don't want to go there." He's like, "Then you got to accept Jesus in your heart." And I said, "Okay." And I accept Jesus in my heart. And from that moment, the thing that drove me is that every moment that I either lied or did something bad, I thought, "Oh no, now I'm going to hell." So the motivation to live a certain style of life or to live a certain cultural type of life was the fear of going to hell. Now, as I grew older, you start, you know, believing in the boogeyman less and you start worrying about different things. And so I started believing that the motivation to live a certain type of life was because I wanted God to bless me. I didn't want him to curse me, right? So in college, right before a final is when I tried to be very, very good. I would wake up and read my Bible. I would pray because I wanted him to give me an A even though I never went to class. You know, or even though I'm just cramming the very last minute. Or if I was like kind of interested in a girl, then I try to live a very holy life. Why? Because I was hoping that by living a holy life, that he would say, "Okay, she'll like you back," right? It only happened once, and I married her. So and so it was really, the motivation was fear, or it was really just like wanting more blessings. But so when we look at Leviticus chapter 19, what we see right away as God through Moses is teaching the people of Israel on how to live a life, we see right away what the motivation for that holiness is. So when we look at verse 2 of chapter 19, it says this, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.'" Now, I used to read this passage, and I used to, you know, it's a passage that, you know, I've read a lot and I've memorized, and I used to think, you know what, okay, my motivation for holiness is because God is holy. And though that's true, but the more I thought about it and the more I was meditating upon this passage, the word that really stuck out and the phrase that really stuck out was this: "Be holy, for I am the Lord your God am holy." See, just even in that one little phrase, what we see is this, that God's motivation or the way that he motivates us to be holy is not just because he's holy, but because he announces to us that he is our God. And the reason why this is very important is this, is that in chapter 19, verse 2, he already declares to the people of Israel that "I am your God," and then gives a list of commandments for them to follow. This is a reflection and almost a repeat of Exodus chapter 20. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 2, it says this, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." So for those that don't know the context, Exodus chapter 20, verse 2 is the beginning of the Ten Commandments. And what we see right away is that God announces to the people of Israel that he already is their God, that they already are his people, even before he gives the Ten Commandments. Meaning that our identity and our proof that we are God's children and that he is our God has already been set even before we have lived or completed any type of commandment. So the motivation that we have for holiness is not fear. The motivation for holiness is not to please God or to gain acceptance from God, but the motivation to live a certain life is because God has already loved us. Because God has already graciously provided for us the identity for us to be called his daughters and sons. That is the motivation to go and be a light and to live a holy life to those around us. Now, if that is our motivation, the second question is this. What does holiness look like? What does holiness look like? The motivation for holiness starts by acknowledging the love that God has for us, and in response to the love that God has for us, we love God and we love others. Okay? We love God and we love others. Now, when we think about holiness, I don't know if this is how you think, but we have this idea that holiness is like this a kind of spiritual enlightenment that we must transform into. That we might go up into the mountains and have a time at a retreat, or we read the Bible, and sometimes somehow that there is like this spiritual awakening within us, and now all of a sudden we are holy. So I don't know why I turned into like my dad right there. Holy, not hoary, okay? And so when we think about holiness, we often think that this is some kind of a kind of weird transfiguration of our spirit, or that there's going to be like this weird aura about us or different aura about us where now we feel a little bit more elevated in our spirituality. But that's not what holiness is really talking about. The holiness that God is prescribing for us is something that is tangible. It is something that we can actually do. It is something that we can actually apply. So the way that we can group this idea of holiness is this. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbors as yourself. This is what Jesus Christ says in Matthew chapter 22, verse 35. When one of the lawyers comes in and tries to test Jesus, says this, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. And this is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. So now, what Jesus is saying is this. Everything that is written in the Old Testament, everything that is written in the laws, everything that is written in the prophets, the application for his people is this. Love God, love others. So for us now, in this day and age, when we're reading a passage or reading a chapter like Leviticus chapter 19, what will help us interpret and what will help us apply that into our life is to think about these two groupings. How do we love God? How do we love others? So the first part of what holiness looks like is we have to love God with all of our hearts, mind, and soul. And we see that starting in verse 3b, the second half of verse 3 to verse 8. Says this in chapter 19, verse 3 and 8. It says, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Do not turn to idols or make for yourselves any gods of cast metal. I am the Lord your God. When you offer a sacrifice of peace offering to the Lord, you shall offer it so that you may be accepted. It shall be eaten the same day you offer it or on the day after, and anything left over until the third day shall be burned up with fire. If it is eaten at all on the third day, it is tainted, it will not be accepted. And everyone who eats shall bear his iniquity, because he has profaned what is holy to the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from his people. Just very, very quickly, what we see in just that section is this. Moses is repeating two of the first four commandments in the Old Testament in the Ten Commandments. And if you don't know how the Ten Commandments work, the first four commandments deals with our relationship with God, and the next six commandments deal with our horizontal relationship with those around us. And what God is reminding the people of Israel here in Leviticus is this. He's saying, hey, if you want to love me, observe the Sabbath, don't have any idols, and keep the regulations of public worship. He again repeats the idea of what it means to offer a peace offering, right? And last week we found out and we learned that the people of Israel at this time, they were offering their sacrifices to these goat demons, right? And God, that's why God regulated the slaughtering of animals outside the tabernacle. So he's saying, hey, if you want to love me, no idols, don't sacrifice to idols, keep my Sabbath. And then we skip over to verse 19. I'm only going to read a portion of verse 19 because from verse 19 to 31, there's a lot of weird regulations. Regulations that probably feel like these do not apply to us at all. And the reason why, or the reason, the thing that we need to glean from this is this, that in order to love God, not only do we keep the commandments of keeping the Sabbath and not having any idols, but we also love God by reflecting who he is, by living a life distinct from the rest of the culture. And all these regulations that we see in verse 19 through 31, God is trying to distinguish the people of Israel from becoming or living a life similar to the pagan nations that were surrounding them. So let me read just a couple of verses. Verse 19, it says, you shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. Like, what? Like, that doesn't apply to us at all, right? You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seeds. And you shall, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two different kinds of material. If a man lies sexually with a woman who is a slave, assigned to another man, and not yet ransomed or given her freedom, a distinction shall be made. They shall not be put to death because she was not free. But he shall bring his compensation to the Lord, to the entrance of the tent of meeting, a ram for a guilt offering, and to the Lord, to the priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering before the Lord for his sin that he has committed. He shall be forgiven for the sin that he has committed. See, what was going on is that in that culture, they had slaves. And for them, slaves were less than human. And people in that culture, they can treat slaves whichever they want, whichever way they wanted. But what God is teaching here is like, hey, we're going to be different. You can't just lie with the slave just any way which you want. And if you do, you got to pay for that sin. And the idea of breeding two different types of cattle and sowing two different kinds of seeds, he's saying that's what other nations are doing, but I want you to do things differently, to keep pure how I want you to live so that you can reflect. And here's the thing, not so that you think you are better than them, but so that you can reflect to the people outside who I am, that I am a God that is different from all the other gods of this world. That I am a God unlike the idols of this world. That I am distinct, that I am distinguished, that I am set apart. So in that same way, if you want to love me, not only do you follow the first four commandments, but you also live a life that is distinguished from the rest of the world. So that's what holiness looks like, part one. Part two, what else does holiness look like? Love your neighbor as yourself. See, if we can get down to kind of like the core of what Leviticus chapter 19 is teaching, we look and find that in verse 18. It says, you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. See, this second part of verse 18 is what Jesus quotes in the Gospels. It says the second greatest commandment is love your neighbors as yourself. And then in verse 3a of Leviticus 19, what we say is, it says, every one of you shall revere his mother and his father, right? And then in verse 9, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, neither shall you gather the gleanings after you harvest, and you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. In verse 11 and 14, there's commandments, don't lie, don't steal, don't defraud. And then in verse 18, we see a culmination of everything that he's talking about in those verses. Just love your neighbor as yourself. So what does holiness look like? Right? When we look at these commandments, what we have to understand is this. Looking at verse 3, when it says revere your mother and father, that's a repeat of one of the Ten Commandments, right? To honor your father and mother. If you grew up in the church, this is a wonderful passage that your Sunday school teachers like to teach you. Hey, little kids, you got to obey your mom and dad, right? Honor your father and mother. But let's look at the context of what's going on here. These commands are communicated to who? The adults of Israel. So when this command to honor your father and mother is given to the people of Israel, it's not that God, like Moses was like, hey, okay, now this commandment is for the little kids, honor your father. No, he's talking to people our age. Why? Because to honor your father and mother meant this, that you are physically taking care of the elderly, those who could not take care of themselves. And now when we look at the context of what's going on here in Leviticus, what are they doing? They're on a crazy backpacking trip. They got to pack up, set up camp, and move, and they're moving through the wilderness. You know who are the people who are the slowest and need the most help? The elderly. And that's why it's revere your mother and father. Honor your mother and father. Take care of the elderly who cannot take care of themselves. And these elderly people, if they had no children, what they did was that they would adopt an heir. Meaning this person who may not biologically be their child, they would give all their inheritance to them in exchange that in their old age that this person would take care of their needs. So now we begin to see what it means to love our neighbors, right? And then in verse 9 and 10, it's talking about the idea of gleaning. This is not something that we do today, but this is something that happened here in the Old Testament. If you had land and if you harvested, what God was commanding is, hey, don't harvest all the fruit or don't harvest all the wheat. Leave a little behind. Why? So that the people who don't have their own land, people who are poor, the people who are powerless, that they may come and pick up what is left behind so that they too will have sustenance, so that they too will have a way of life. And it says, do not lie, do not steal, don't defraud. And all those things, when we lie, when we steal, when we defraud, what are we ultimately doing? We are taking advantage of those that cannot fend for themselves. So the way we love others is this, by loving those who are weak, loving those who are most in need. And when we look at it culturally, when we look at the elderly, when we look at the people who are poor, when we look at these people who may be outsiders who are easy to defraud and lie to, these are the people who are most burdensome to us, right? These are the people who weigh us down. If you look at the camp in Israel, these are the people like, hey, if we didn't have the poor and the old, maybe it wouldn't have taken us 40 years to get to the promised land. Maybe it would have taken us a lot quicker. But what God is commanding is this, if you want to love your neighbor, love those who cannot take care of themselves. So like I mentioned before, oftentimes when we think about holiness, we think that it is some sort of spiritual experience, right? We wait for like that big aha moment. We wait for that kind of enlightenment within our souls so that we can have like this radiant light of goodness coming out forth from us. But the reality is that holiness, when we look at it tangibly, it's this. It's found in the mundane. It's the daily opportunity that we all encounter to love God and to love the people around us. Holiness is found in the practical actions of not dealing unjustly with those around us. And holiness is found in the action of not forgetting to love God who has already saved us by his grace. Holiness is a discipline. It is something that needs to be practiced. It is something that needs to be exercised. It's not just this great spiritual awakening. That's what holiness looks like. In your everyday life, how do you strive to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind? And in your everyday life, how do you strive to love your neighbors as yourself? So the last question is this. What are the practical applications of holiness, right? There are a lot of different applications that we can make from just this passage in chapter 19 alone, but I'm gonna keep it very simple. The practical application is love God, love others. So we're gonna look at number one, how can we love God? And the thing that I'm gonna mention about how we can love God from this passage is this, keep the Sabbath day holy. Keep the Sabbath day holy. Mark chapter 2 verse 27 says this, and he said to them, and this is Jesus speaking, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Okay? The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. What that basically means is this, in our context, Sunday was made for our benefit. We weren't made to serve Sunday, okay? Sunday was made for our benefit. What the meaning of Sabbath and the desire that God had for the Sabbath was this, that one day a week that we would have an opportunity to find rest and to be renewed by God's love and his grace so that we can live the rest of the week, so that we can have the energy and the strength to live out our calling for the rest of the week. But for some reason, because we are sinners, because it's so easy for us to kind of warp God's commands and God's desires, we turned into slaves of the Sabbath. And we can look at the Old Testament, or we can look at the New Testament, and we can look at the Jewish culture and think, oh man, they had the Sabbath so wrong, but we do this as well. But let me give you some examples of how the people of Israel and the Jewish people had turned the Sabbath not into something that brought them rest and renewal, but it made them slaves to this day. So they had a couple rules. Oh, I mean, they had a lot of rules, but I'm only gonna mention two. One of the rules was that on the Sabbath, women were not allowed to look in the mirror. Okay? And you're like, why? The reasoning was this. On the Sabbath, a woman looks in the mirror and she may see a gray hair. If she sees a gray hair, she's gonna be tempted to pluck it. And then she ultimately plucks it. She has now harvested. That is work. Women shall not look in the mirror on the Sabbath. Okay? Men were not allowed to spit on the ground on the Sabbath. Why? You spit on the ground. A guy walking comes, steps on your saliva. Maybe he pivots, maybe he does something. He has now harvested the ground. He has worked and tilled the ground. Men should not spit on the Sabbath. See, there were all these rules regulating the Sabbath, and for the people of Israel, it has become a hindrance for them to see exactly what it was that the Sabbath was made for. And in that same way, even in our day and age, that's what we struggle with. We see Sunday not as the place of rest and renewal for us, but we see it as a place of it's a hindrance and a burden for us to relieve our guilt. Right? We wake up and we say, oh man, I wish I could sleep a little longer. You know, it's kind of overcast, it's kind of raining. I just want to lay in bed. But I gotta go to church. Why? Because then God, if I don't go, God is not gonna bless me. So we see the Sabbath as a hindrance for us. Right? Or we think, oh man, I really want to go on this trip. I really want to go on this vacation, but I got to serve at church. And it's becoming a hindrance, a roadblock to the real rest and the real renewal that I'm seeking. See, there's nothing more disappointing to God than when we see his gifts and the things that he has for our benefit, and when we see it as a curse. Now, you know, I have three kids. My daughter, she's the oldest, she's 6 years old. And, you know, sometimes she gets scared of certain things. And nothing brings me more joy than seeing my kids being joyful and enjoying cool things, right? And I remember when she was about, I think, 5 years old, or maybe, I forget when, early on, I made her go on a roller coaster, and she was scared. At Happy Hollow, it's kind of like a little small kids amusement park. And the roller coaster is like, not really a roller coaster, it's like a train, you know? But then I made her go on and then she got super scared and she kind of got traumatized. And then later on, I was like, hey, no, roller coasters are really fun. You'll have so much fun if you go on this roller coaster. A year later, she said, you know what? I'm willing to try. And I said, and she's like, because you told me that it's fun, right? So we went together and she absolutely loved it. And she went on it like 4 times in a row, and then I started getting dizzy. I was like, oh, I'm too old for this. But it brought me so much joy that she believed my words, that she would enjoy and have fun going on this roller coaster, that despite her previous experience, she realized that the things that I was saying was true. She believed it by faith, and she went on this roller coaster. And God, the way he feels loved by his people is when we, by faith, believe in his words and believe the goodness that he has planned for us. So that even though culturally, waking up early and spending your Sunday in a place and hearing a bald man talk may not sound restful or rejuvenating, we believe God's word that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So that's how we love God. Second, a very practical application of how holiness looks like in our life is this. How can we love people? How can we love people? Now, holiness in our own personal lives is for the benefit of those around us, okay? Holiness in our own personal life is for the benefit of those around us, because when we strive after holiness, it means that we're striving after loving those around us. Now, when we look at specifically the commands in chapter 19 of Leviticus, what we see is very practical applications for the people of Israel to love who? The people who are burdening them the most. The elderly who can't take care of themselves. The poor who don't have their own food. The immigrants who are among them who can easily be defrauded, lied to, and taken advantage of. And the way that God says, love your neighbor as yourself, means to take care of those people that are burdening them the most. And for the people of Israel at that time, the people that they interacted with constantly were those people. They were all around. So how do we love others? Luke chapter 6, verse 32 says this: if you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful even as your Father is merciful. Now, I'm going to make a jump here. In Leviticus, it seems like they're talking about people who are physically in need, right? And for us, we can make the application. We should also be helping those that are physically in need around us. There are a lot of people who might be financially and socially in a worse place than us. And we could definitely reach out to them in that way. But I also believe this, that in the same way that these people were truly burdensome to them, there are people in our lives daily who are spiritually, emotionally, and mentally draining for us, right? They are a huge burden to us in that way. And for us, it's so easy to just cut them out of our lives and not love them. I mean, that's even just kind of the thing, the culture that we are being taught right now. There was an article in the New York Times that talked about the power of positivity. And basically the entire article was that you as a person, you need to do a hard audit of all the relationships in your life, find out who the toxic people are, and get them out of your life. And to spend more time with the people who boost your positivity. It sounds great, right? It sounds like really solid advice. But basically what that's saying is this: hey, the people who can't benefit you, forget about them. Only hang out with people that can benefit you. That sounds really selfish if you think about it, right? The message of the gospel is completely opposite. It says, what good is it if you love those who love you? Even sinners do that. Everyone loves those who love you. Instead, love those who you consider your enemies. Love those in your life who might be spiritually draining. Love those people in your life who are just emotionally just a parasite. Love those in your life that just mentally drain you and just sap all of your energy. Now, I am going to give a caveat. Use discernment in this. If it's, you know, you don't only surround yourself with negative people. But at the same time, there are people in our lives, because no one's perfect. There are people in our lives that are difficult. There are people in our lives that take more mental fortitude for us to have a conversation with them than maybe someone who is just super chill. There are people in our lives that are harder to love. There are people in our lives that really annoy us. And the command for us, if we're striving for holiness, is this: love your neighbor as yourself. Galatians chapter 6, verse 2 says this: bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. We've become a culture where we don't want to bear anyone else's burden except for our own. And on top of that, we want others to help bear our burdens, right? We don't want to take responsibility for our own actions, and we don't want to be responsible for other people's actions. But the gospel message says this: bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. But also when we love one another, we must love not expecting anything in return. In my life, it's so easy to have this transactional philosophy, right? When my wife asks me to do the dishes, I go, wait, let's see, who did the dishes last, right? I go, no, you do, it's your turn, right? And you start counting and you start keeping score. Wait, who's doing more? That's really, when it comes to marriage in a nutshell, it's really you internally thinking about how much you're doing compared to your wife. Okay, or how much, you know, vice versa. That's all marriage is. And texting each other to get groceries. That's it. Because we're so transactional in our relationships. And even in that same way, when we think about the people around us, we do things for them expecting that they will do something in return. And when they don't reciprocate our love, our service, our time, we get disappointed. And we think, oh, these are the people that we need to cut off. Or these are the people that are no longer worth loving. These are the people no longer worth my time. But what God says and what the gospel says is this. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 19, we love because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, whoever loves God must also love his brother. See, when we talked about the first point, what is our motivation for holiness? It was that God first loved us. So if the tangible application of holiness is that we love God and we love others, then we have to ask ourselves, what is the motivation that we have to love God and love others? A lot of times, our motivation for loving others is because we expect them to love us back. And when they don't love us back, we get disappointed. True motivation in loving others is understanding that God first loved us. We love because he first loved us. When we're seeking to love others based on the fact that they will return their love for us, means that our capacity to love will never be full. It will always be drained because people always disappoint. Newsflash, as humans, we are kind of bad people. We are very selfish. We always look out for our interests first instead of the interest of others. But when a capacity to love others is full because we recognize that God first loved us, then we will no longer love others expecting something in return. And the reason why we have the capacity to be able to do that is because that is what the gospel message of Jesus Christ is. Because God first loved us, even though he knew that there was no way we can love him in return. When Jesus Christ, when he died on the cross, he didn't die on the cross expecting something in return from us. He knew that in our depravity, in our sin, that by our own power, there's no way we can give him back what he is about to give us. But he does so anyway. Why? He says, not my will, let your will be done. Because he was driven not by the hope that we would return our love to him, but he was driven by the fact that the love of the Father was in him. In that same way, let us practice holiness by loving one another, not expecting that they will return their love to us, but let us love one another, being filled by the love of God who first loved us. Let us pray.